Well, this is a nice moment to have one of our conversations, Tiger. Thanks for being available for a little discussion about what's going on. Here we are right on the verge of the alignment of the Sun, Venus, and Regulus on August 22nd. We're just before there. It's the evening before, but we're in the midst of it. And there's something terribly interesting to me that I notice when I get to look at one of these events. And when the event itself arrives, like a full moon or an alignment like this, it seems to come alive a little bit more vibrantly. And there's more to tell. No matter how many predictions we may make about it, when the event actually occurs, there's always something that was perhaps a little bit stronger than we thought, or perhaps a little different than we thought. So there's always a surprise. So, you know, it's really lovely to be able to share this moment with you, and we can have a bit of a discussion about what's going on, what we sense, and then maybe also about some things that are coming up soon. So thanks for being there. You've been kind of looking at this too, huh?
Yes, even this evening, and I have some revelations to offer too at some point.
Great. Well, let's start right in with that. Let's dive right in and tell us what you sense, what's kind of revealing itself to you related to the energy of what's happening right now.
Well, I don't really know much about Regulus, you're saying that Regulus basically represents the heart of God, right? The heart of God.
It kind of points to the way that all knowing and all experience is connected. That's really kind of at the heart of how this speaks to me. And it goes back to like 1996. There were some experiences that I had, and I didn't realize the Sun was aligned with Regulus at the time that these events were going on. Matter of fact, it was some things that Judy and I were doing together. We were up on Mount Shasta. And it was pretty significant, and it had that kind of a quality to it about the connectedness of experience from place to place, from time to time, from perspective to perspective, and you know, from us as individuals to us as a whole, how all of that's kind of tied together. So that's the way it resonates for me. There's an ancient interpretation to the energy of Regulus, which has to do with, you know, great regal power, even, you know, royal and divine power. And it comes with a warning not to exercise revenge. And because there's a mythical king that ends up destroying his kingdom and his whole family by indulging anger to the point of taking revenge. So, to just give the nutshell version of that story.
Now, what you just said is very important.
Go for it. Tell us more about it.
It's very important because the position of Pluto right now is of significance, and Pluto is a planet that has a lot to do with revenge and the dark side and the bloodlust. So yes, we have Pluto opposition Mars right now, and that is a definitely a revenge transit. So that works. That has some significance for the words that you just said about the king and his sons and what happened in the old parable, the old myth. And we also have Pluto square Uranus, which is significant. But what I wanted to say was, when I looked at your chart, I noticed that for the degree of the Sun, 29 degrees, 31 minutes, that's a perfect, I'm sure you selected the perfect opposition. So Neptune's 29 degrees, 31 minutes retrograde.
Yeah.
Opposing the Sun at 29 degrees, 31 minutes. And that Sun is conjoining Regulus. Is that right? Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So when I saw that the Neptune was retrograde, I wanted to go back in time to when Neptune was before at 29 degrees, 31 minutes of Aquarius. And so I did that. I conducted a search. And I've just got to say that this year, to me, what is so profound about the astrological connections that we're making this year is that they are very archetypal. They come, very powerful events and formations come at, on the full moon or the new moon or the equinoxes. And to me, it no one will talk about that. You don't see that in a traditional discussion. But from where I'm coming from and from my own experience, when I see the precision of these events in time associated with the points on, you know, the four points of the chart of the seasons and the moon cycle, to me it's very powerful. It's extraordinary. It's extraordinary. It's almost mathematical. Let me give you an example. The last time that Neptune was at 29 degrees and 31 minutes of Aquarius was March 20th, 2011. That was the spring equinox.
Oh, okay.
Matter of fact, it was only 9 hours away from the sun, because the sun at that time, the sun was also at 29 degrees, 31 minutes of Pisces. 9 hours later, the sun entered Aries and conjoined with Uranus.
Mm-hmm.
So in all of that time, we're basically synchronous to a nine-hour period. So we really, it takes us back. And I remember when we were on the radio, and that day was a very, very powerful day. We had been talking about it, and we saw revolutions starting in the Mideast, and a lot of events. We had a giant earthquake and tsunami.
At that time,
I said, I feel that this period really is substantively the beginning of the Aquarian Age. As the sun, at the equinox, the sun conjoined Uranus. And now we're looking at another picture, another formulation that harkens back to that time. So I find that quite amazing. On the equinox, we had Venus was conjoining Neptune on the equinox. And now we have Venus opposing Neptune. So in the cycle of Venus, it's basically relative to Neptune, it's moved halfway around. To form its first opposition of the new cycle. So that in that way, we can gain some clarity. The oppositions will bring us clarity about where we stand, so to speak. Now, I haven't gotten into any dissecting things and explaining this and that, the significances and stuff. But to me, just the pure mathematics, just the association with the angles and the degree placement, to me, is just mind-blowing. This doesn't happen. And we've seen it happen since the turn of the year when we had the eclipses have also come at a time in conjunction with the other astrological angles and formations. We've also had eclipses. So this to me has been very profound. I feel like, you know, we're building up to something that is a profound, profound event. Now, if I want to go back and to talk about what the meaning of all this is, let me just click over on this chart here. We'll go back to your chart.
Okay.
And now, so what we're doing is we're looking, since you picked an opposition, you picked an, or else the universe picked an opposition. It just happened to be that the conjunction is also in opposition very precisely to to Neptune and to Chiron.
Right.
Okay. So here again, it's uncanny. It's uncanny that we have this kind of preciseness. Well, so let's take a look at it. Back at the equinox, Neptune was at 29 degrees 31 minutes of Aquarius. So it was less than a half degree from graduating into a new sign, which would be Pisces, its own sign. Neptune would do better in Pisces because it's its own sign, its own natural rulership. So we've actually gone through quite a long period where Neptune has been in Aquarius. And we are now very close to saying goodbye to that sign, at least for Neptune, and moving into a new sign. This happened earlier in the year when Uranus also moved into a new sign. So we've had some significant sign changes. When Uranus moved into Aries, Neptune is going to move in Pisces. Saturn moved into Libra. That's all happened this year. Isn't that right?
Yes.
Okay. So we've had some sign changes, and that basically changes the game. This is the last of the retrogrades for Neptune, and it now will move very quickly. We'll move into a new sign. We'll move into Pisces. So this is part of what's happening here. Just that as we had in back in the equinox, as we had Uranus changing sign from Pisces to Aries. Okay, so when you have these latter degree shifts that happen, when you have planets at like 29 degrees and they move in and out, in other words, they move forward a little and then they back up, they stay in the latter degrees of the sign. That means that we're endeavoring to finalize and to clear up the issues relative to that planet and that sign before we can then consolidate and move into the next sign and begin to harvest the challenges there. Okay? What I want to say now, as I look at the overall opposition, where now instead of having Venus conjoining Neptune, which was what we had in the equinox, we have Venus conjoining the Sun, opposing Neptune. Okay, so Venus is flanking the Sun on one side, and Mercury is flanking the Sun on the other side, although that's a 10-degree separation. But you have Mercury, Venus sandwiching the Sun, opposing Neptune and Chiron. So what this says to me, and the fact that it's now making this connection with Regulus, it's calling for a maturity in the collective unconscious, in our own histories, our own karmic histories, in our own psyches, in our institutions. It's calling for a maturation of basically our perspectives and our consciousness. So as Neptune is very much aware of the ideals and values of the society as it is in Aquarius, we will then be moving shortly into the sign Pisces, where Chiron is already. And when at that juncture, what we have is a real input from the spirit world, from the higher dimensions, which is trying to get us to move ahead, to empower us by getting us to surrender to higher principle, to surrender to compassion. We do not live in a compassionate world. Even the United States right now is involved in three wars. And the amount of money that is being spent upon military just in this country alone dwarfs the budgets of many countries around the planet. So we are not in a compassionate time, although individually there are people who are making a lot of headway with compassion and with the Christ principle. So we have a multi-level, multi-dimensional challenge for us to move from the old way of doing things and empower ourselves at a very personal level, which in this case, the Sun and Venus and Mercury represent the body of man, the personality of man. We have an opportunity to experience some empowerment there and some wisdom. But here's the caveat. The caveat is you can't enter a new phase without letting go of the baggage from the old phase. So this is what we've been looking at here in a lot of ways with these latter degree planetary positions. And we're also looking at it because we're on the verge of 2012, a very, very long cycle in the development of human consciousness. We're looking at what has worked for us as a species and a civilization, and what hasn't worked for us. What hasn't worked for us can be pinpointed quite easily. At the very most fundamental level of personal belief, and that personal belief comes within a context of socialization. The whole idea around the belief around scarcity, the belief around low self-esteem or low self-worth, the belief around survival and competitiveness, the beliefs that we have, and I'm not setting them up in a sentence structure, I'm just popping out the words for you, okay? The belief that we have in basically conquest is a very good word to describe the Piscean Age. There was conquest for riches and wealth in the name of religion, and that was like spiritual conquest. These do not work anymore. These are outdated, these are anachronisms, and given all the other dynamics that are going on in our societies and the disparity of wealth as it's being concentrated in the hands of fewer and fewer people, and the challenges that we have with the environment, you know, and the weather, climate, degradation of resources, and that would be another one. Another belief is just take what you need. Now we can't do that anymore. We have to look at being able to replenish and make sustainable the resources of the earth, take care of the water. All of this, the water, the air, the soil, it's all being polluted. It's all being basically degraded and destroyed. So here comes, when push comes to shove, what will happen is you're going to have institutional breakdown. You're going to have economic breakdown. This is what we're looking at right now. And we're looking at about inept Congress who, you know, we have a polarization in the society. We are polarized. Half the people believe let's do it the old way, and the imperative is to give all the players, the dominant interest groups, to let them just run the show. And half the people want change. Half the people want to see a radical change, or at least moving back to some of the social gains that we made in the Depression, the Great Depression. So we're at a pivotal point here. We're at a fulcrum. And there has to be a let go. There has to be a surrender in order to become empowered. Now, that's an interesting one. It seems to be ironic at best, and perhaps quite paradoxical, that we would surrender in order to become empowered. Well, how would that happen? If you surrender, first of all, you have to become aware of these beliefs that are controlling you. The beliefs from our childhood experience, beliefs that have been, we have imported from our parents, from our society. We have to become aware that there is a belief, that there is a process called socialization, and that these values and these beliefs are passed down from generation to generation. We have to become aware of that process. And we have to look at what the impact of those beliefs and values have had for us personally. And then we have to rise above it. And this is where Neptune and Chiron help us move out of our context, almost as if we float off the ground to about 3,000 feet and turn around and look back at the Earth and look back at the masses down here, and look back and see the struggle from a higher level, the struggle and the pain and the trauma and the discord and the unhappiness. And we need to see that from an exalted place, from a spiritual place. Sometimes the only way we can see that is when we get hammered by a fire, tornado, a tsunami, an earthquake, and we have to deal with death. We have to deal with our own mortality. That can soften us up. That can take us to the higher transcendental perspective. But that's what it takes. And we will also have to engender a place of objectivity where we can look, where we can do an analysis and say, this doesn't work, and we're going to drop it. This one can work. This one can be affirmative. You know, this one can be, this particular belief works for me. This makes me feel well. This one over here, and the behaviors tied up with the belief, no longer appropriate. So when you get social chaos, social collapse, economic, you know, hardship, people are asking questions. They're wondering, okay, well, where do I fit in? What's the role of government? What's the living wage? What should I expect? You know, what do I need for my own fulfillment? What do I need for my own growth and to maximize my growth? So this is a lot of the process that we're involved in that we need to. And it did begin in the 60s. That's where my era, my generations, we started all this questioning process. And what has happened since the 60s is that the power of the military-industrial complex has gotten more concentrated. The corporations have gotten richer, and the wealth has just moved over to now where just 2,000 people control 50% of the wealth in the United States. You know? So that's what we're looking at. That's what we're looking at. And to make this shift, and I would say that this is what 2012 is about, the end of the 26,000-year cycle. This is what it's about. We're going to have to reanimate our culture and our species with life-affirmative beliefs and beliefs that will lead to an honoring of Mother Earth that will allow us to engage in sustainable practices and at the same time open ourselves to the input and instruction from higher orders.
Yeah, it seems like there's something going on here that is profound to a degree that it takes us into territory that we had never imagined. All of the best ideas that we may have about solutions, we may be moving into something that's taken us beyond all of our ideas, all of our best notions about how we can possibly navigate here. It seems to me that there's something so profound, so basic happening. I would liken it to finding our bearings or gaining our feet beneath us and finally gaining our balance and our orientation to the point where we can begin to get our bearings and then start to consider where we might move. And this movement isn't just a navigation in time and space. It's also the navigation of experience, the shape of experience. And up until now, we seem to have been pushed about by the shape of our experience. And now, what seems probable somehow is that experience itself becomes something that we shape. We are entering into a point where we're not just pushed around by circumstance. We realize that we contribute to circumstance, that we have an impact, that our presence is already having an impact. And we start to become conscious of how that works, how our presence. And when we speak of our presence, we're really speaking of the presence of all of humanity as one totality, as one thing, and not only just humanity. The total energy, living energy of our world, and literally of our star system, our galaxy, and even the cosmos itself. It gets big very fast, but there's a practical side to it, that we are also being fed and informed from the largest scale to the smallest, and that also the smallest scale, which we might consider ourselves to be often, you know, if we don't consider ourselves completely disconnected, we certainly see ourselves sometimes in a struggling way with our situation and perhaps with the place that we seem to hold. But what this tells us is that there's this connectedness between even our smallness and the very greatest dimension. It's kind of got that holographic, fractal feel to it, but it's not just an idea. It's something that we actually are beginning to experience. And I feel this is something that is profoundly present in the consciousness that emerges and lives in us and through us and what pervades our experience as we go forth. It's entering a place where we move beyond all belief and enter into a direct relationship with what's really going on. And our attention ceases to be diverted upon every distraction that would keep us from seeing what's actually happening, what's actually going on right in front of our own faces, what we ourselves can experience through our own sensations, through our own perception. And in the interplay and texture of our own experience. So that's something that really resonates for me strongly, and I feel like it's kind of echoed in what you were saying about the way that we're kind of reaching the end, the very furthest extent of where we've been. You know, it's like we've kind of tested out all the different options. We've tested both the good options and the bad options. And it seems like we're finding the limitations of those old circumstances. And now we're starting to recognize that there's something else. There's something larger that's immediately present. It's always been there. But now we're reaching a place where we can actually begin to perceive it. So that's another way that this whole thing really, really grabs me and strikes me.